There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Ahem! To the authors, hosts, and varied listeners of Max Mike Movies. I write this as I sit upon my sit-upon on a stormy, cold New England night. Many thoughts traipse their ways through the empty chambers of my mind, and yet there are some echoes of which I cannot rid myself. Like haunts of old, or perhaps reverberations of past undigested bits of beef, they roll about demanding attention at inopportune moments. Unwanted guests vying for attention amidst other, more purposeful thoughts. Oh, and farts. These are, of course, beside the point. What prompted me to scribe this missive to your oral publication was to share my opinions on the vast, perhaps endless, subject of motion picture films. As I am sure your listeners know, it would be impossible, perhaps impertinent, to even suggest counting their number here. But I am also confident in my belief that it would lessen their impact, their very nature, if such an attempt were not even begun, for fear of the insurmountable task towering over one's existence, a constant shadow of reminder that one had taken not even the first most step. So, what I shall do for your dear listeners is this. I will declare, without fear of reprisal or counter-argument, that there are, indeed, a lot of films. I hope this small epistle finds you both well, and know that you can count on me to share what little wisdom I have on both this and following occasions. I am, and shall remain, Stifle Do-Right.
Or, wait, Max Mike Movies!
Stifle.
What? What the hell just happened?
Well, don't you remember Benjamin Franklin used to write letters under the name Stifle Do-Right? So I thought I would quote one here. Is it somehow...
That was Silence Do Good.
What?
Silence Do Good was his pen name when he was a kid.
Not Stifle Do-Right?
No.
Well, we've continued our series because I want it and you're going to like it. Why? Because it's right there in the title. And if you couldn't guess from that little opening, and you couldn't, this week's movie is, like our letter writer, a national treasure.
I see what you did there. Oh, dear.
It's got Nick Cage and Sean Bean and history stuff. But this show also has Max, the secret lies with Silence But Deadly Levine. Give us a toot, Max.
I did. You couldn't hear it.
Deadly!
And I scrub the decks behind him as I am Mike. What the hell did you have for lunch, Luce? We'll get back to Nick Cage in a moment, but first we're going to get to our
poll question.
Last week's question was, what is your favorite Steven Spielberg movie? Seems like you had some. Let's start off with Vince. Vince of the Wild Frontier. He's from Canada.
Blam, blam.
that's right, the Klondike. Okay.
Yeah.
He wrote, quote, I like Spielberg as a director, but he isn't someone I feel like I will automatically like any of his films. Loved Jaws, it's a true film classic. Close Encounters was one of my faves for years, but over time, less so. I really loved Empire of the Sun, a smaller, more character-driven... A smaller, more character-driven film. Jurassic Park is a great film, and it's so influential, it's hard not to put it on a list of his best films, end quote. He has had a lot, hasn't he? Well, thanks, Vince.
Quite a few.
Smaller? Next up, from our deep, nearly empty mailbag, we have yet another letter from Bill O'Lading Max.
Bill O'Lading.
He's got another essay, which starts, quote, what a Sophie's Choice. They're all so good. I'll go with two.
Sophie's Choice?
He did not. And there's Sophie, I think, in any of his films. But he continues. I'll go with two, one dark and one inspiring. War of the Worlds 2005 really captures a world under absolute attack. The pacing, the atmosphere, it's amazing how they were able to capture temperature in that film. The tripod's discordant three-tone horn sounds, and dust and clothing wafting down from the heavens. I recall seeing it and viscerally recoiling when the protagonist passed by all the handmade missing person signs. 9/11 was still so raw at the time. The film captures the fear and despair that refugees would experience in that situation without being fantastical. Indeed, half the film is the danger created by other people panicking, thieving, as opposed to the aliens. It ends on a womp womp note. Yes, the aliens caught the common cold and died, but that's true to the book. An absolute masterpiece of a film, though not to be viewed lightly. And Jurassic Park, 1993. I've written before of my love of this film, no need to repeat it here, but it was an absolute seminal moment in cinematic history, including actors, composers, writers, animators, all skill sets really at the absolute top of their game. It's absolutely the gold standard for what a summer blockbuster should be, and very few have ever hoped to hold a candle to it. Honorary mentions for me, E.T. 1982, Schindler's List 1994, and The Color Purple 1985, end quote. Huh. War of the Worlds.
Really?
Interesting. But that's what Bill always gives us. Interesting. Thanks, Bill.
True. True. Yeah.
Back on the old Facebook page, Brian Mundo responded, what the? He said, and I quote, do, 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 do.
I think it's all I have to say to you.
No, I know. I think those are the official words. No, I think they are the official words to the dinosaur song, more commonly known as the theme from Jurassic Park. Thanks, Brian. Where's the dinosaurs? Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Mystery scribe Tony Kellner wrote, quote, Raiders of the Lost Ark, it's perfect for what it is. The adventure, the characters, the just enough humor, end quote. Good reasons indeed. Thanks, Tony. Roland Hardy answered, quote, Raiders for fun, Schindler's List for the sad truth, end quote. True indeed. Thanks, Roland. Jamie Kleinert said, quote, Hook, because Robin Williams will always be Pan, and as with so many other Spielberg films, the Williams score is phenomenal, end quote. Hook was a lot of fun. Thanks, Jamie.
Okay.
Bangarang. Byron Ho simply stated, quote, Jurassic Park, cause dinosaurs, end quote. Thanks, Byron.
Dinosaurs is funny.
Kelly J. Cooper sent us, quote, I went to IMDb and looked at all of his movies. Surprisingly, I never got around to seeing a bunch of his big hits. Of the ones I have seen, I think Raiders of the Lost Ark edges out E.T. and Minority Report, my second and third favorites, because of the world building and the mythology. And honestly, it's just more fun. I also feel like there are little touches that fill out the characters more, end quote. See our episodes on Raiders, E.T., Minority Report, and Jurassic Park. Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah, apparently we like Spielberg, too.
Yeah, we didn't even include AI in there, which I don't think anybody actually brought up as their favorite, so what a surprise.
I don't think so.
Yeah, or Ready Player One. Nick Hoffman posted, quote, Raiders all day, possibly the only script and film that I think is perfect, end quote. Well, there you have it. Thanks, Nick. Dave. He sent us, quote, not a Spielberg fan, but I agree that he got everything right in the first Raiders of the Lost Ark movie. Not sure how well it would stand up today, but loved it when I first saw it and for at least a decade thereafter, end quote. Oh, it holds up just fine. Thanks, Dave. Yeah. Julie T. O'Malley, through Nick Hoffman, said, quote, Hook, but she worked on that film, so, end quote.
Oh, wow. Man. So it's a little biased, but reasonable.
But so indeed. Thanks, Julie. Agatha Gasparoni was up next with, quote, Hook is a sentimental favorite because it was popular in my household, and of course Robin Williams, and it has a John Williams score. Schindler's List is a beautiful, heartbreaking movie that I've always loved as a history teacher. Lastly, Catch Me If You Can was a fun story with a great soundtrack, John Williams again, and he did it so well, even if it turned out that the subject of the movie, Frank Abagnale Jr., completely lied about his experiences, which, I mean, he was a con man, so what did you expect? End quote.
Yeah.
Wow, Hook is more popular than I thought.
That's a lot more votes for Hook than I would have thought.
Okay. Yeah. I'm also a fan of Catch Me. I think it's one of his better quiet films. Like, it's not a huge blockbustery film.
Not a blockbuster, but yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Agatha. Charles Forsythe's answer was, quote, if I have to pick one, Raiders. But there were so many. Schindler's List, The Color Purple, Close Encounters, Jurassic Park, The Terminal, and more. Except for 1941. So, not an easy choice. End quote. Yeah. No, not 1941. But I have the most amazing coincidence to impart to you. See our last week's episode, blah, 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 blah. Thanks, Charles. Guess that leaves just the little old Lonely Hearts Hotline and Doris Hempelmeyer. Spritz that throat, Max. Here she comes.
Oh, I'd like to have a close encounter with her.
Hello, Max Mike Movies. Hi, Max. This is Dora Semple-Meyer here to answer your poll question, which just happens to be, what is your favorite Steven Spielberg movie? Well, there's so many of them, like, I don't know, all of them? But I'm going to narrow it down to an odd one, and I'm going to pick Duel. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a really interesting movie. It's really kind of scary and thrilling, and there's a big truck. So that's my answer. Duel. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I look forward to hearing next week's episode. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Duel. Wow.
Okay.
Didn't see that
That's
coming.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is a really good movie. I mean, it is admittedly, you know, TV movie.
Yeah, and I couldn't watch it because that guy kept running after the car going, McLeod.
He did not.
I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah.
Cool.
But no, that's it. That's an interesting choice. That was like one of the first things he ever did.
Yeah. Max, it's your turn. Yeah. What's your favorite Spielberg movie?
I like the one about the fishy.
Okay.
Yeah. I got to say Jaws in just terms of sheer oomph.
Yeah.
And effectiveness. I gotta go with Jaws. It is almost perfect as a movie. And it really, that was the one that created the summer blockbuster. All respect to Jurassic Park. Maybe you can say it perfected it. Jaws was the original.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? I know you hate Spielberg because he's Jewish, but what's your favorite movie?
Yeah, but you can't say that because I'm gay.
Damn.
I'm trying to think. There's not actually many of his films I haven't seen. Like, I've seen most of his movies. I've even seen movies that are not really about him, but really are about him, The Fablemans. So I got to probably agree either that or pair it with my second favorite. I can't tell which I like better, Close Encounters. Mm. Jaws, it's just such a good film. We reviewed it when they put it back in theaters a while back, see our entire episode on Jaws. I'm amazed that only one other person really mentioned that was Vince.
But
it's just, especially when you get down to the three characters, the tension, the pacing, everything's just so good. People still went out to see it. My theater was packed.
Yeah.
But
absolutely. It was incredibly popular when they re-released it.
Yeah. But Close Encounters 2, it's all about the characters and everybody, even Terry Garr, is at the top of their games. It's just, as long as it's not the special edition, I hate the special edition. Hate Peter Pan.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would probably go with those two, but I have enjoyed a lot of his other films. I really like Bridge of Spies. That's a really
good
movie.
Oh, that is good. I even like, and it's a dumb movie, but I kind of like The Terminal.
I never saw it.
Yeah.
Although that's another Hanks film, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Today, I'm French. Isn't he French in that or something?
No, he's from basically made up a stand.
Oh, I know that place.
Yeah,
it's in Mission Impossible a lot.
yeah, no, that's Kreplakistan.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah, well, he's charming in it. The movie doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm. Well, thanks tons for all your answers. We love them, just like Liva Snaps or Scooby Snacks. So how about another?
Movie Day?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'd like to know, what's your favorite treasure hunt movie? Which one keeps you excited the whole time? Which one passes the P-test best? Let us know. We'll go over how at the end of the show. But before we move on, we got ourselves a
listener mail.
In regards to last week's episode, 1941, we got this little history lesson from our favorite fact checker, Franz Josef Halbwitz.
Herr Halbwitz, yeah, he's good.
Yeah, he's good.
He wanted to comment on our thoughts regarding John Belushi not being able to fill up his plane's tanks at a common gas station. He wrote, quote, remember, you specifically asked for this info in your episode regarding 1941.
We did. This is on us.
Be careful what you ask for, monkey's paw, etc. Executive summary. No, Wild Bill could not have safely refueled his fighter plane out in the desert at a regular gas station. Said he could. No, I told you so. Actually.
Nope, it was me.
Let's go back and re-listen to that episode. Max is wrong.
See, it was me.
Yep, as I thought. Then he continues, you could stop here. He doesn't. During World War II, as now, the overwhelming majority of piston engine planes ran on gasoline, but a special gasoline on steroids called AV gas. This includes Wild Bill's P-40 with its Allison V-1710 supercharged V-12 engine. Nerd! Nowadays,
I knew it was the V12.
You said it was a V9. You don't even count right. Nowadays, regular car gas is typically 88 octane, with the spendy stuff rated at 92. AV gas has an octane rating of 100 to 130, and price at least double of car gas. Back to the 1940s, car gas had an octane rating in the 70s, so it was even more unsuitable for aircraft.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah.
Max was wondering about diesel fuel. Diesel engines were a thing back then, but are very heavy compared to the amount of power they put out. They have been extremely rare in aviation. He might have been thinking, he's about to claim this, he might have been thinking about jet fuel.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Jet fuel.
Jet engines use a fuel that is kinda a highly refined form of kerosene, and it's even more expensive than AV gas. Ooh. And now, some fun facts, if this isn't nerdy enough yet, it is. Fun fact number one, AV gas for piston engine planes still has lead in it, and it probably will for years to come. So that means the typical private pilot has been breathing lead fumes for their entire flying career. This may explain things about them.
It really does explain a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. Fun fact number two, there are small planes that run on conventional car gas, which pilots called MoGas. I guess because they go faster? I don't know.
I don't know. MoGas, Mo Problems?
The engine and fuel system need to be specially certified, validated, and otherwise blessed by the Federal Aviation Administration. A private pilot of our mutual acquaintance has such a plane. Thanking you in advance for your prompt attention to this matter, I remain Harbwitz. End quote. Viele Dank, Herr Haubitz. We always enjoy these little hints of history. But for now, let's get back to National Treasure and
the facts.
Budget, $100 million, which seems about right for one of these things. Yeah. Take, $347 million, and that explains a lot.
That also explains the sequel.
That's the lot. And the show. Diane Kruger, who plays love interest Abigail Chase, did most of her own stunts in that big car chase. Damn.
Oh, God. You mean hanging off the back of the van?
Yep.
Yikes.
Yeah. This movie was the first allowed to actually film outside Independence Hall.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. While there may be some questionable history in this movie, one fact is indeed true. There is writing on the back of the Declaration of Independence. It does say, quote, "Original Declaration of Independence dated July 4th, 1776, end quote, written upside down on the bottom. Right after that, it says, "No, really, this is totally the original one and not a fake." Okay, I might have added that last part.
I think you did.
Some might say this film is a bit long, but the original cut was almost 4 hours. Yikes!
What?! Good God, did they go through like all 13 colonies in that one?
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Yikes.
So old Grandpa Gates said that the Gates men and the Masons were doing their best to keep the treasure out of the hands of the British.
Well, but those Duke boys kept taking it. What? Oh, sorry, yes.
QQQ. Well, last time I looked, Sean Bean, who plays the dastardly Ian, is indeed British. Speaking of Sean Bean, hey, he doesn't die in this movie. How about that?
What? I thought that was in his contract. He had to die in every movie he's in.
Poor Sean. He kind of does.
Yeah, I guess. Well, one does not simply walk into a Nicolas Cage movie.
No, not even the Bean. That's how they'd all refer to him that way, I'm sure.
Sure.
So when the movie's in D.C. and it shows a building that the bad guys are planning in, that's the Watergate Hotel.
Ooh.
It's irony. Still there. Yeah. Okay, I did not see this. Early on, when the group is trying to guess the importance of the first clue of Charlotte, Riley pipes up and says, "Albuquerque. See, I can do it too. Snorkel." Yeah. End quote. This is a direct reference to the Weird Al song Albuquerque, in which there is a snorkel. I didn't see it either.
Missed that completely. Yeah. Well done.
So, Max, when is Philadelphia not Philadelphia?
When it's Vancouver?
No, when it's Knott's Berry Farm. Seems they have a replica of Independence Hall you could film in.
I was close.
And our favorite question ever on this show, when is New York not New York? When
Pretty much in most movies.
Yeah, there's another one we'll get to, too. When Trinity Church is really First Congressional of Los Angeles. So there you go.
Oh, all right.
The connection of Knights Templar to Masons is somewhat dubious, not least of which the first mention of it was by Mason author Andrew Michael Ramsey, and he did so in an admittedly false history book of the Masons.
Mm-hmm.
Dad, how come I'm older than you?
I
don't know.
John Voight's character's dad, played by Christopher Plummer, was only 9 years older than him.
Yeah, he was a very developed kid.
That's
a
virile tot.
Well, you know, it was all. He was probably one of those kids he had in Sound of Music.
Yeah. Oh, and likely so much more. Max, you got anything?
No, not really. I know there's a ton of stuff in there.
Yeah. Well, if any of you out there have seen this movie and want to comment on historical inaccuracies, by all means, let us know. But till then, I will try and water down this plot.
Okay, strap in.
Yep. I hope you have a lot of water. Back in the dawn of this country, a single man was trying to pass on, and pass on the secret of where a huge hidden Masonic treasure was hidden. It needed to be kept out of the hands of the British, but before the last caretaker of this ages-old treasure could get the secret to the president, he died, only being able to share the clue with his footman, some guy named Gates, and no, it was not Bill. Skip ahead many generations and we find young Ben Gates, played by Nick Cage, scouring the Arctic with his pal and benefactor Sean Beeman, who never plays bad guys, so what could go wrong? The last clue merely said, "The secret lies with Charlotte." What could it mean? Why, an old ship buried in the snow and ice. Somehow they find it, and deep in the hold is just another clue. This one is sending them off on either a wild goose chase or perhaps to the next clue. It's a map hidden on the back of the Declaration of Independence. Keen! But Ben won't steal it to take a look. Sean Bean has no trouble doing that, so he traps Ben and his buddy Riley in the hold after the gunpowder, which is still totally good after 200 years, is set alight. Ben and Riley just make it out with no hearing loss and utterly unscathed. So they speed off to the National Archives to try and cut Sean Bean off. But to get there, they have to try and win over lovely Dr. Abigail, who thinks they're nuts to believe there's a hidden map. She's seen the back of the Declaration and she knows there's no map. So Ben and Riley decide to steal the document first. And they do. And then... Okay, there's kidnappings, more thefts, hidden clue after hidden clue, which takes us all over historical parts of the United States, even to the steps of the Old North Church in Boston. Sort of, but not really. Is there an actual treasure of the Knights Templar? And is it really buried in New York? Did I mention New York? Or Philadelphia? Yeah, we go there too. It's Nicolas Cage versus Sean Bean in this rip-roaring, heisty-chasey film. Huzzah!
The film. Nicely done.
God, I started writing that as like, I literally can't mention anything past the Arctic because we'll never stop.
Yeah.
It's a bit much, but that being said,
a lot.
Did you see this when it came out? Do you remember?
I think I did. I think I did see it in, 2004?
Yeah.
In the theaters, yeah.
And?
I remember sort of being kind of meh about it. Yeah, I mean,
$100 million is a lot to be meh at.
Yeah, I know. I'm not sure why that was my reaction at the time. I think I was expecting something more, maybe Nicolas Cage to be more Nicolas Cagey, because that only slips out a couple of times.
Yeah, we'll come back to the performances,
but he's very restrained.
Yeah.
What about you? Did you see it in the theater?
No. I, as you well know, are not generally a fan of Nicolas Cage and ignored this film. And then I saw it on, where did I see it first? I don't even remember. Somewhere online. Somebody had it, Netflix, somebody had it, and I watched it because I was bored. I think I had a grudging reaction to it. I think I grudgingly enjoyed it because it's like, I don't want to like it. It's got Nick Cage in it. But I think I grudgingly did. But we'll see whether I've seen it since then or not, because that may or may not play into my final decision. But we have a cast here.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage, one of your favorites. You like Nicolas Cage.
I do. I wouldn't say he's one of my favorites, but I think he's very good.
He has actual range. Some sort of like Valium or something for this?
No. This was Calm Cage. Calm Cage shows up in a few of the movies.
Uh-huh.
Not very often.
No.
Shows up in City of Angels. Mm. He shows up, I think, in Leaving Las Vegas.
Yeah.
There, he's basically at the low end of the cycle. He's not Manic Nick. Manic Nick is in most of the other movies.
Yeah.
You know, Face Off, Wicker Man, How to Get Burned! How to Get Burned!
Renfield.
Not the bees! Yeah. Rep Renfield. Oh boy, that was, he was in his element.
Yeah.
But in this, my main problem is I don't think he's very interesting. Oh. I think he's too restrained.
So you're more of a fan of Crazy Cage than you are of
I kind of like Crazy Nick, yeah.
Do you think Crazy Cage would have worked in this film?
No, it really would not have.
We would not have been paying attention to any of the history or the treasure or any of the other actors. We'd have just been sitting there going, huh?
And in this version of him, I can at least buy him as a history nerd.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you think he's okay in this?
I think he's decent in this. This is not one of his best, but he's all right.
Yeah. Diane Kruger as Abigail Chase.
Mm.
I'm going to go with one of our favorite catchphrases. She's great when she's there, but they don't give her nothing to do.
They don't give her much to do. You get the feeling she could have done a lot more. And those eyes, my God. But,
yeah, she has two of them.
On either side of the nose, it's amazing.
Just where they should be.
Yeah. Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh. Ooh. Anyway.
Picasso notwithstanding. Yeah, I like her. I like the fact that she's meant to be an equal to Ben Gates, except that she doesn't get to do that much occasionally. No. She does not become a damsel in distress.
No.
Riley does, but no, I'm just kidding.
they sort of, between the two of them, they become a damsel in distress.
But it's not through anything like, oh, I broke a heel or anything dumb like that. No. I just wish she could have like lashed out a little bit more like
Emily Blunt.
I wish they could have let her, because it seems to me like she can do that stuff.
Yeah, so she was fun. It makes sense. They're all academics. They're not, you know.
Okay. Well,
he's a treasure hunter. But, Riley and her, they're academics. They're, desk people.
I think she could have, and I'd like to see more of her, because I thought she was cool. I think in the second movie, she divorces Ben Gates, and I'm like, oh, good, she woke up. But something like that. Justin Bartha as Riley Poole. Yeah. Honestly, I think he's kind of perfect, because he's our surrogate.
Yeah, he's the audience surrogate, but he's also, I cannot forgive him because he gets that one line, we're in.
I know.
My most hated line of any technology aspect of a movie.
And?
I have never heard anyone in real life say anything even resembling that.
Yeah, so the movie fails the Max Levine test, so.
Yeah.
Oh, well. But I like him because he's just the right mix of smarm and I don't understand why don't you explain it to me without being too expository. So
yeah.
Pretty much all the history stuff that Ben Gates brings up is like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Sean Bean, perfectly dastardly. Also,
yeah.
Not really a stretch.
Not much, but he actually is, his casting is perfect. He has that sort of likable, sort of scary, sort of very, very evil, but you get why people follow him, because he can be charismatic. He's got that whole package.
He's perfect casting except for all of his past roles, because as soon as he shows up and he's a friend of Nick Cage, oh, this is not going to go well.
No, this is bad. Don't trust him, Nick.
Which is not anything to do with his acting ability. It's just, well, if you just check the past, every role, he's at some point some kind of a bad guy and he dies. Mm-hmm. So he does not die in this, though.
No. Don Voight.
Yeah.
Pretty small role, but...
he plays...
And I...
But he is funny.
He is funny, and he's almost believable as Nick Cage's father. And let us face it, he is the best father that Angelina Jolie could have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
go ahead and picture something, Max. I dare you. Picture something. You like Angelina Jolie? Picture something. I'm not going to tell you what that is.
No,
but you go right ahead. Don't.
Yeah, so yeah, he's actually a lot of fun, and he's also kind of believable.
Yeah. Harvey Keitel is Sadusky. My note on him was, what a waste of Harvey Keitel.
I mean, this, again, is a very restrained performance for Harvey Keitel, but it didn't have to be Harvey Keitel. No. You're right. You could have had any sort of serious-looking law enforcement believable type. I don't know why they used him. I love to see Harvey, but they didn't need him for this.
No, and Max, there something's wrong on Saturn III. I think it's the fact that we get to see
Kirk Douglas's
ass. Yeah.
Yep.
Christopher Plummer as Old Man Gates. He's there for 30 seconds. He's fine. He has a mustache. His mustache does a great job.
Excellent mustache. Very good mustache work.
And then, quite honestly, it just devolves into bad guys. Bad guy, bad guy, bad guy.
Bunch of bad guys, bunch of random people, bunch of like, hello, I'm his FBI agent.
Yeah.
So or, I'm dumb.
Yeah. I'm British and dumb. I'm Scottish and dumb. Okay.
Yep.
I will say that the kid who plays young Ben Gates, whose name is Hunter Gomez, It looks to me like he's going to grow up and become Kurt Russell. He does. He looks a lot like young Kurt Russell. Okay. So I don't think he's going to grow up.
Boy, boy, boy.
Yeah, pretty much. So any other notes on the cast before we moved on?
No, not really. The cast is solid. I mean, it's a good bunch.
Yeah. Not outstanding, but good. Mm. So we're talking about a big Knights Templar treasure, something that's been written about many, many times. The big problem I have, I might as well get this over with now, is they're looking for this treasure supposedly taken over by the Masons from the Templars, who are all destroyed in one fell swoop on a Friday the 13th, which is why that's a thing. So, hey, if y'all are worried about the bad luck of Friday the 13th, unless you're a Knights Templar, you're fine.
Yep.
But everybody knows for a fact that the real Templar treasure is buried on Oak Island. So therefore, this movie makes no sense.
Oak Island.
You never heard about this?
No.
Oh, dear gods. This is not only a huge thing. It's been a show on a History Channel for the last 10 years. Okay. So there was and have been a number of attempts to dig up what they think is this buried treasure on this island way in the north of Canada that otherwise would have nothing on it. And every time they go, they keep finding structures that are built into this hole that allow things like seawater and stuff to come in to keep people out. They also keep finding stuff like bits of silver and stuff that date back to the 1600s, which have no business being buried under the ground. But the idea is this was the Knights Templar. They've actually found Templar crosses in there too, but they have somehow that's where it's buried, and it was made such that either you can't get it out or only if you know the secret, which, you know, at this point we're just bulldozing our way through. But
I kind of feel bad for the Knights Templar. They get blamed for everything. Every hidden treasure, every conspiracy, it ties back to the Templars, the Freemasons, the Rosicrucians, the Illuminati, the Girl Scouts. I don't know. It's,
well, the Knights Templar are the reason the gas prices went up. So thanks, Knights Templar. Totally.
Thought they were all dead.
You want to think that. That's what they want you to think. But yeah. So.
Well, clearly the Freemasons are mostly just involved in architecture.
I mean, except, you know,
building abattoirs.
Let's get to that. So I'm skipping way ahead, but we finally get to the final, and this is going to be one of those things that pisses Max off, so it also will not pass another Max Levine test. But they finally get to the place where the treasure probably is. Spoiler,
it's in the,
and
in the vault of the crypt.
All of the torches and chandelier and ropes and all of the machines still work fine.
Do you know how long a hemp rope will last? Even in good conditions, even if it's been oiled or tar treated, try 30 years.
Max, it's special mason rope.
Oh, I see. It's masonite or some such.
But I have a question.
Masonium.
Yeah. So this treasure pit area was made by masons.
Yeah.
Why would they build the walkway out of wood?
I don't know. And why did the wood survive? It's under friggin' ground. Well, they should have come in and gone, wow, a big pile of mulch. That's the treasure.
Yeah.
Not only that, there's nothing living down there. There are no rats, no bats, no insects.
Oh, come on, Max. There's none of that in New York City. You know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The place would be Rat Central Square. It would.
Hi. Hello. Like,
oh, my. Hello. Wow, look at all this empty space.
Yeah.
It got, the ropes are intact, the mechanisms all still work.
Yeah.
The torches, which, okay, sure, you could light them, and they would burn out in about 2.5 seconds.
Yeah.
No, that is a trope that really pisses me off. These ancient things that haven't been tended to in the worst possible places.
Yeah.
Still all work flawlessly.
That's not moist.
Yeah.
Also,
there's no water there. They're not like they're right next to the ocean.
Well, there's rivers on either side. Eventually, there's ocean. Yeah. I also just, they were panning over all the treasure, and all I could think of was, think of all the pillaging it took to gather this stuff.
Yeah.
And all those scrolls, good thing they're so well protected.
Oh, yeah,
intact.
That's my favorite. Ooh, scrolls from the Library of Alexandria. No. Small piles of dust from the Library of Alexandria.
And roach poop.
Roach poop.
Roach poop of the ages.
Generations of silverfish feasting on it.
Yeah, but Max, I think they realized that the treasure was really the friendship
the
they found
they
along
made
the way.
Sure.
I kept waiting. You know, the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, God, no. The treasure is America.
Yeah. I mean,
there's like, nope, it's a pile of gold.
Yep. Yeah. There's that hint, isn't there? Yeah. So, yeah, the treasure and where it's kept were unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So, I'm with Max. Every time we see, and even in Indy Jones movies, Indy Jones is just as guilty of this as anything else. Oh, all the mechanisms still work. And it still pisses me off. When we talked about Raiders, one thing I forgot was, thing that pissed me off is when Indy lifts the little statue off the pillar in the beginning of the film, the pillar should have gone up, not down. That doesn't make any sense, but whatever. Because the Jovitos really know how to build.
And I am sorry. By the end of that movie, the Declaration of Independence would have been a bag full of confetti.
The one thing it has going for it, for quote-unquote toughness, is that it was done on vellum. So that is animal hide.
200 years ago, and vellum rots just like anything else, and they roll it up in a poster tube. They roll it up.
Yeah.
No! It gets run over by a truck at one point.
It doesn't get run over. It is underneath the truck, but it's between the wheels. They're very careful about that.
Oh, excuse me, but it gets banged around, thrown around rooftops, tossed here and there. No. Just no.
And they paint it with lemon juice. That didn't do anything either.
Oh, God. Let's pour something really acidic on this vellum.
Yeah. It's. Have you ever seen it? Have you seen the real one?
I have not.
Oh, I have.
Yeah.
The really sad part is it's not in great shape. Like the ink, the Iron Gall ink, whatever it's called.
Yeah. Yeah.
It wasn't preserved very well, or Iron Gall ink does not last very long, because there's big chunks of it. It's really hard to read.
Oak gall ink fades after a couple of decades.
Yeah. I mean,
they were using what they had on hand, but. And also, they weren't like, okay, now let's hermetically seal our declaration. It was like, okay, hey, George, tack this up to the wall so we don't lose it.
Well, never mind the fact that somebody had to come around and go, no, this is the real one. I know. I'm going to write this is the real one on the back, so now you know.
Yeah.
And we're just taking their word for it. We don't know.
There were multiples. They had to send them. They sent them out to various European leaders. Sure. Yeah.
And eventually they were printed as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, antiquities, they're tougher than you think.
Yeah, yeah. But what about the plot itself? What about the actual story here? First off, what do you think of the pacing? This is 2 hours is kind of long for an action movie.
Yeah.
How did it feel?
I think that in general, the pacing's actually pretty good, even if some of the plots are, shall we say, unlikely. That being said, I did feel the film went on a little too long. What about you?
I think they could have cut a couple of things. I mean, honestly, after a while, they keep coming after clue after clue. I had my Grunkle Stan moment of, oh, come on!
Yeah.
I'm like right there with John Voight, who's going, it's just going to be another clue. It's going to be another clue. Yeah. And he's right. Yeah. Every time, he's right.
Funny thing is that he keeps talking about how there's always another clue, but it doesn't seem like he's actually followed any of them. Like, the one clue they ever had was the secret lies with Charlotte, and they never got any further. So I don't understand the whole, it's always another clue, it's always another clue. But how would you know you never did it?
Well, he said he spent 20 years doing it.
I don't know, but he never found another clue.
Nothing. Apparently, he did it. He's just not very good at it.
I guess not. He's the bad Gates or whatever. So, yeah, I think it's the action's pretty good. I think that we move along pretty well. I don't think any of the chases or shoot 'em up scenes are particularly unbelievable, except for the fact that there don't seem to be any police in any of these cities.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of these cities, I mean, I know it's supposed to be in the middle of the night, but when they end up at the Old North Church in North End.
With the giant street that's 4 lanes wide.
4 lanes wide and absolutely empty. The North End is never empty.
No.
And the streets are 4 feet wide.
Yeah.
To drive through them, you have to tip your car on the side and push it.
In fact, during that scene, I swear we could hear those tripods from Mars just off camera. Because they also get to Boston, except it's not Boston, which pisses me off. But yeah, also, let's get to the some of the other issues that usually make Max very, very unhappy.
Yeah.
I got to say, the security in DC
oh my God.
Is so horrible. They can have two heist attempts going on at the same time, and both of them are successful.
Both of them would have worked.
Yep.
This is post 9/11.
Yeah.
You don't have two guards. You don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. My God. The National Archives. There's a small army in there.
Oh, except when there's a party.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. When there's a party, then they're all drunk. I don't know.
Yeah. And the film just goes, yeah, there's security, whatever. Like, there's not really anything
just
there.
Just brush it off. Independence Hall, okay. There's not much valuable there. Few people are going to try to run off with the Liberty Bell if that's actually still in Independence Hall.
Yeah, it's still there, but the one that we saw was made of foam, just so you know.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Fakey.
Fake.
Yeah. It is a real weak point of pretty much any heist or thriller film when you have to deal with security, and you basically come up with the idea, well, if we just make security kind of dumb, it'll work. And it's like, okay.
It's like, I will get these. You know, that's the other thing. How does this guy who's basically just a history buff treasure hunter know how to make fake fingerprints?
Well, remember, he also had trainings with Navy SEALs. And
because Navy course, SEALs are not taught to make fake fingerprints, I don't think.
How do you know? Have you ever been in
any
Navy
SEALs out there? Do you guys? I didn't think so.
I mean, any harbor SEALs out there?
I mean, Navy SEALs, if they're like, huh, we can't get through this door, blow it up. Okay.
Yeah. And he's, you know, both a historian and, I guess, superhero. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but whatever.
The one thing I do like, he doesn't, like, grab a gun and start shooting people in the arm like everyone does. And he doesn't turn out that he's also a secret master of the martial arts. He punches one guy and it hurts his hand.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we can probably guess why he isn't shown shooting anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Who made this movie? Disney made this movie.
Oh, well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. We might see him, like, shaking a walkie-talkie at somebody.
Why, you, I, oughta? Yeah, something like that. There are some things that are directorial choices that I actually was in favor of. So, after somehow Gates and Riley survive the explosion on the Charlotte...
I think they hid inside a refrigerator.
Yeah, but Indy was in the way, so they had to pick something else.
Ah, there you go.
I will say, I am glad that they just say, well, there's an Inuit village 9 miles that way. We can get a boat back. And we don't have to see it. We don't need it. Although, maybe that 4-hour cut actually has it in there. I don't know. I mean, hell, if they can survive the blowing up of that ship, which, did you buy that?
No, not at all.
You know why they lived?
Why?
Ben closed the door.
Doors, they're magic.
It wouldn't be so bad.
The National Door Council.
It wouldn't be so bad if they didn't pull back and show us the exceedingly violent explosion.
First of all, that's 200-year-old gunpowder. I don't know. Hey, anyone knows? Would 200-year-old gunpowder still be viable?
It's freeze-dried for freshness.
But I don't think it would go up all at once. It would be more like foot, boom, flame, foot.
Maybe. I don't know how gunpowder works in that
respect. When it's that old, I mean. The shock waves are obviously pretty significant. They would have been pulp.
Well, never mind.
At least they would have been deafened.
Well, they come out and they were just like literally brushing some snow off. And it's like, well, I guess we got to go. Yeah, I heard you. Well, let's go to that thing. Like, give them an extra time to get away and then fall flat and explodes. And I might be okay with it. But they were literally like in a closet in the boat huddling behind a door.
Yep.
I also have to wonder, why was there all that gunpowder anyway? Like, that seemed to be their cargo.
Well, it was supposed to be a treasure ship, and they had cannons, so...
But they didn't have any treasure on it.
The whole point was
there wasn't
any. They had a pipe.
Yeah, the pipe. Okay. Sure. Then we
get
to the
pipe.
The Meerschaum pipe was cool, but it's... When I'm looking at it going, nobody would have smoked that. That is one of those doohickeys. That's a MacGuffin. That's what that is.
That's a MacGuffin.
Basically, we find out in the hold of the ship that, hey, the next step is to go to the Declaration of Independence. There is a... And I don't know about you, but Ben going through the riddle and figuring out what it means, I was just like, what?
I kept waiting for C for Catwoman!
Pretty much. If it wasn't frozen, I'd have been at C, too. So we're going to have to go, and Ben's like, no, we can't. We can't steal the Declaration. No, I can't do Nicolas Cage. Yeah. And, of course, Sean Bean's like, the hell we can't. I'm going to leave you here because you're going to get in my way and I don't need you anymore. And so they do that. And then they get out and get back. And at least they address the idea that there should be a lot of security. But then Riley's like, well, hey, I've got a cunning plan. And I'm sitting there watching, and Ben just goes, this might be possible. And my reaction was, no, it isn't.
No, it really wouldn't be, no. That's the other thing. They have, like, what, 5 minutes to prepare this plan?
Kind of.
They do a remarkable amount for the two of them, neither of whom is an experienced thief. Although they are treasure hunters, we don't know what they've done to get treasures before.
Well, and Riley, he said he literally, like, lifted out of a desk job somewhere.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I will say there's some stuff that I thought, again, was a good decision. So we've got a treasure hunt movie. That's always exciting, right? Because we all want to know what it is. We want to see them find it. That's part of the deal. But we actually, very quickly on, and admittedly, we know it's coming because Sean Bean's right there, that there's not just a treasure hunt. We've got these two rivals going at it. I actually liked that decision, that they kept the tension going. What did you think?
I think it's nice when you have the enemy who's like the race for time against another enemy, someone who isn't trying to just kill you, but is trying to get the same thing you're getting.
Yeah.
That's a nice tension hook.
Yeah, I worked in Raiders of the Lost Ark because we had Belloc. Yeah. We just didn't know we would have Belloc. He showed up later. But I thought having him right from the beginning added some needed tension and kept things going. Mm-hmm. Not only that, what did you think of the music?
It was a lot, quite honestly. It reminded me, I kept thinking, am I in a Jerry Bruckheimer movie?
Well, there's a reason for that.
What?
It was a Jerry Bruckheimer movie. He produced it.
I thought it was John Turturro. Oh, he produced it. Okay.
Don't you remember the lightning on the tree? That's his thing.
No, that's right. Because it was John Turteltaub who directed it. But yeah, it felt very Jerry Bruckheimer-ish.
I liked the music. I thought when it showed up, it had that pulse-pounding beat in the high points that gets you excited. There was actually a pinball game that did this back in the day where it started off with this slow, steady beat in the background, like a heartbeat, and then it kept getting faster. If you got higher scores, it would get faster and faster. And quite honestly, I think it actually made you get more excited into the point where you screwed up and lost. So I think that is meant to, and in, at least for me, worked to get me more excited because I was more excited. So, it is not, what's the word, subtle. But I thought that the music worked pretty well.
I liked a lot of the character relations, although the stuff with Ben Franklin Gates and Daddy Gates, I'm sorry, was really skated over. You know, he shows up in the house and there's a lot of intergenerational stuff going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's gone.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel earned. I'm sorry. It was too hasty.
There might have been more in that 4-hour cut.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't be surprised if that was more of it. And honestly, that might have helped a little, but
I don't know. I actually didn't mind what little we got. I think that it felt like there could be more in a further film, which there is. Because if I remember correctly, we find out that John Voight had actually married Helen Mirren.
I think so.
In the second film, I think that's who plays his mom.
I can't remember.
And
I saw the second film. I have absolutely no memory of it.
Oh, except I remember.
I think Ed Harris is in it.
It does, and then there's this Incan treasure that's, I think, behind Washington's left ear on Mount Rushmore or something. Meanwhile,
yes.
Hitchcock's up there trying to wave them off. It's like, go away, I'm
go
busy.
Go away, I'm using this myself.
Yeah, we get to Independence Hall. Actually, no, I'm sorry. We get to the National Archives, and he gets the declaration, which he rolls up and puts in full tube. Now, there's a chase scene, which is actually pretty fun, I think.
Yeah.
But we finally go back to Independence Hall, and he finds these glasses. And the glasses are going to allow him to see the map. What did you think of the reveal with the Ben Franklin multicolor-hued glasses and the 3D map on the back?
I think somebody read, hey, Ben Franklin invented the bifocal. Let's do something with glasses.
Yeah.
Because apparently Ben Franklin was also a master of interchromatic optics.
Yeah. And invented the 3D movie at the same time.
Like, I was waiting for it to be a magic eye thing that you had to stare at until your eyes unfocused, and then you could see the clue.
Well, he has glasses with red, green, and blue lenses, which means that they will filter out those three colors. The problem is that when you put them on, it's not that you see something on the map. It is literally in 3D floating like a hologram.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that was a bit much.
Yeah.
But not to mention the fact, what kind of ink did they use that didn't fade after 200 years, especially if it's secret magic invisible ink?
I think you just told us what kind of ink it was. The science of the glasses was more than a bit much. I mean, it literally, the red and blue lenses are exactly what they used to use with old 3D movies. So,
the one thing I will say, I had no trouble believing the glasses would survive. They're metal and glass.
Sure.
Probably even the frames might have been gold. Gold is
very silver colored, a long time. Could have been platinum. Oh, yes, lovely platinum.
Or it could have been silver, something that doesn't rust.
Yeah.
You know, they survived. Okay, I'm all right with that. I got to say, it's a kind of a weird place to hide it, because what if someone knocks the wall down?
Well, at least the things that they chose were actually in buildings of import and potentially likely to withstand time and wrecking ball, et cetera, et cetera. I will give them that. Trinity Church, I don't know. I guess it's a church. You don't tend to knock those over, although they didn't even have Los Angeles yet. So, oh, I'm sorry. That was New York. Yeah. I forgot. Hey, but speaking of Trinity Church, good thing that it was open and empty.
Yeah, funny. Nobody in there, nobody worshiping, no homeless people sleeping, nothing.
No, nothing. You can just walk in and start wrecking stuff and nobody comes running.
Hold on. Hey. There was one guy down cleaning the crypt, remember?
At the end. He didn't show up there because they were knocking a hole in the wall.
Yeah. So, yeah. That was very convenient, yes.
What else you got, Max?
One part I just don't get is at the end, when they turn over the treasure to the world or what have you, they get to keep 1%. 1% of it. Why do they get to keep any of it?
I mean, they could have already kept some of it and nobody would have known. I mean, I'd have taken some of those solid gold goodies out with my, when I left.
Yep.
Well, also, who's overseeing this? Oh, we're going to give it to the
Freemasons.
You mean after the United States is done with it? Oh, yeah, they'll share.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I don't know. I mean, that of course, you know, knowledge is, of course, the big thing. If those scrolls were actually there, okay, sure. But it's money. It is mostly, some of it's we see Egyptian stuff. The only reason we see Egyptian stuff is because we, as a dumb audience, that's the only thing we're going to recognize and go, hey, that's from Egypt.
I recognize that funny beard.
Yeah. We won't know ancient Greek stuff. We won't know ancient Chinese secret, huh? We won't recognize Calgon when we see it.
No. Or the little piles of mold that were the scrolls from Alexandria.
Right. Yeah. So
should have been.
I don't know. Yeah. The ending was a little fairy tale.
Yeah.
So the house Ben Gates buys, they don't actually get us to find this out. Yeah. So the guy who died in the beginning, Samuel, what's his name? That was his house. So that's
okay.
And of course, Riley gets a Ferrari that I actually appreciated. He could not drive.
I thought that I kind of like the fact that you can hear him grinding the gears and he's having trouble controlling it. Because of course he would buy a car that he thinks is fancy but can't drive.
I think in the second movie, like the opening of the movie shows it being towed.
So that was another thing. The crypt under the church that is somehow still largely intact.
Yeah.
They hear the subway going by it.
Yeah.
They feel it vibrate.
Yeah.
It's been doing that for almost 100 years and still the flimsy wooden catwalks have not collapsed.
Well,
I call no way.
Never mind. This is New York we're talking about. Do you think there's a building they haven't tunneled under for the damn subway?
Seriously, even the old pneumatic crap, they would have gone, oh, look at this.
I heard it sucked.
And blue.
At the same time.
Who
but what
thought?
Doesn't but, suck yeah. and blow is the end of our show, so let's get to that.
The finish.
So, Max.
Huh?
You remember being...
Where'd you come from?
I'm right here, right? So I always been and always will be.
Whimper.
So you thought it was meh in the day. Have you seen it since then?
I don't think so, no. I think this is the first time I've seen it since it came out.
Interesting. So you had to watch it for the show? What do you think?
I'm sorry. I'm still kind of meh about it.
Yeah.
There are things I do like. I think it moves along well. I'm glad they didn't release the 4-hour cut.
Ew.
I think the cast does a decent job with what they have. But at the end of it, I was like, I thought I remembered this being more fun. And it wasn't as much fun as I thought it would be.
Mm.
I like some of the history stuff. Again, it's not terrible. It's just, eh.
Yeah.
What about you? How's it hold up for you? I mean, you've seen it a bunch of times, haven't you?
Maybe. Now, it's a Nicolas Cage film. Not generally a fan of Nicolas Cage. We have to admit, this film is big. It is dumb. And I don't know why, but I actually like this film.
This is something that hits a chord with you. That's fine.
I don't know why. It really shouldn't. We pointed out all the dumb plot mistakes in there. We pointed out once again, it's not Boston, but an incredible simulation. An obvious and unconvincing stand-in for anyone who's ever been to Boston.
Yeah.
The acting's fine. It's nothing I'm going to write home about. I'm not like suddenly drawn to Benjamin Franklin Gates. I think his name is annoying, but I get it.
Mm.
I'm not a big American history fan. That's not my thing. Like, I'd rather see, you know, ancient Egypt, ancient China, whatever, and not so much
ancient
this.
Ancient armor.
Yeah, ancient armor. Yes, hello, Speed. But I've watched this film, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 times. I don't know why. It is definitely like candy or popcorn. It's like, it's not good, I suppose. It's not even the best example of this kind of film. But it entertains me. And quite honestly, the second one's worse. I'll watch that too. I don't know why. It's just big, dumb fun. I guess it's fun. So, yeah. If you are someone who likes big, dumb, fun heist films and you're willing to overlook some really stupid stuff, like, whoa, good thing that explosion that happened 10 feet over there didn't get past that door. Whoo.
Yeah,
if you can look over that kind of stuff, join me. We'll watch it. It's fun.
Okay.
Max says, there's lots better fish in the sea. Eh.
There are.
So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what else is out there is our poll question. And we have lots of ways you can answer it. But first, we'd like to go over what it is again. And that is, what's your favorite treasure hunt movie? Do you like films that swing through history or go through the present day? A bit of both. Which film passes the P-test best? And how can you tell us? Lots of fun and fragrant ways. One of those ways is to email us directly at us at maxmikemovies.com. Send us a letter just like we get from people like Herr Halbwitz. Maybe you have some comments on the American history. I wonder if Herr Halbwitz will have some comments on the American history.
You know, I suspect he might know a thing or two about American history.
Yeah. Or like Bill O'Lading, who just likes to email us with his answers to the poll question. That's fine, too. Or suggestions about the show. We're always glad to hear those. You can also leave comments like Vince of the Wild Frontier up on our website, which is at maxmikemovies.com. Don't forget our search feature. If you've ever wondered if we've covered a film, type it in there. You'll find out. We're getting close to episode 400. 400. Which means
you
probably have. But maxmikemovies.com. Hey, if you would like to go to social media, as long as it's Facebook or Blueski, you can find us at Max Mike Movies, because that's where we are. Leave a comment there. Lots of you do. We appreciate those. And lastly, if you like to leave phone messages like Max's perpetual date, Doris Hempelmeyer, you can call us at 617-398-7266. But
she's my national treasure.
Oh, that's so sweet and so cloying.
Yes.
But we have not finished the series. We have a couple more to go. Max, what's the next stop on this little train of cinema goodness? Choo, choo.
You know what everybody likes? Cats!
People like cats. We are not watching Cats again. We've already done it. We're not watching Cats.
No, but I found the butthole cut.
No. No,
yes,
Cats.
Yes, we are. Come on.
We are not watching Cats.
Okay. But you see, Cats actually denies the central tenet of the movie I do want to see.
Oh.
And that is, cats don't dance. Obviously, they do. I have never seen this. This is one you suggested. I have never seen it, and I think this is a good opportunity to do so.
It's a Warner Brothers animated film. Remember when they used to do animation? Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was back in the 16th century, I think.
Yeah, but also, if you haven't seen it, The Day the World Exploded, I think, was the latest
one. Oh, yeah.
It's actually funny.
That is. It surprised me. It's actually a lot of fun. It's very true to the old spirit, but it's updated.
But
I like, yeah.
Cats Don't Dance.
The World Exploded.
Spoiling trivia, didn't do well.
Yeah, I was pretty sure, but I am curious about it.
Cool.
So we will watch it and talk about it, because that's what we do here at Cats! I mean, Max Mike Movies.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.
Dave, 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 D